This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
The unabridged millennial, Mason Payne, here live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. In the past, we used to be able to exchange ideas and offer insights of one's belief. Nowadays, that's impossible. We went from being able to agree to disagree to now it's all or nothing. When did this happen and why? Joining me to give insight on how we have become an all or nothing society is author and psychotherapist Dr. Fran Wallfisch. Thanks for joining me, Doctor.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Since the presidential election, I've noticed that for a lot of people, it's you either with me or you're against me. We either agree or, you know, that's it. That you can't, we can't be friends. When has this started?
That's a really interesting observation. I think it started before. I think it started with the millennials around 2000. We have raised a generation of kind of entitled people who expect, with the electronics advancing, they expect to get what they want now. And on the internet, you can find it. And you can always find someone who agrees with your point of view. You can find it quickly. And there are so many, there's access to so much and so many opinions that there is someone who will validate your position. And we've kind of trained or raised a generation of kids, teens, and adults to not expect delayed gratification. They expect immediate gratification.
I like the validation portion that you said. I mean, that is kind of true. I've seen people make comments on the internet, especially, and people just jump up and say, oh, yeah, that's a great, great point you made. And it's like, well, you know, I'm thinking to myself behind my screen, like, well, that's a bit extreme. But why is it that it's kind of like a group mentality? Would people be more willing to or not willing to say certain things if the group didn't go with them?
I don't think that's true for everybody, but I think, you know, I am seeing in my office a rise in kids, teens, and couples who need and want psychotherapy. And I see, you know, we are living now in a generation and a time where the divorce rate is, in America, it's on average 50%, higher in California, Los Angeles, and New York, where I'm in L.A., and the entertainment capital. And I think it's based on a number of things. First, culturally, we are living in times where it now requires two paychecks. Moms and dads have to both work. In middle America, across most areas of America, in order to make ends meet. And so the mothers are not home raising kids with their kids the way my mom was in the 50s and 60s. And when parents are home with their kids, they don't want to fight with them. They want their kids to, quote, like them. Not just love them, but like them. They can't bear when their kids are angry at them. So, sadly, they're slacking off on boundaries and discipline and giving in, submitting to their kids' tantrums and demands. Kids are being trained to get what they demand. And it's kind of a setup for disappointment because they go out into the world and it's not really like that everywhere. You and I know that we have to deal with daily ups and downs, and we call that disappointment. Kids are not prepared for that. And they have not learned or been equipped with the coping skills of negotiating and giving in, give and take in a negotiation. They're just sort of expecting to get what they want or get their way. And, of course, it's not true for every family, but I'm seeing a rise in those numbers. And I think that's a contributor to why people are not good at the gray area. They're just expecting black or white, all or nothing.
You said that you've noticed that people are looking for psychotherapy. Is that not the same as like a couples counseling or a regular therapist?
Yes, it is the same.
Oh, it is?
It is the same. I'm just calling it psychotherapy. You can call it counseling or talking to a minister or a rabbi or a priest or a school counselor. But really sitting, having a chance to talk out loud with a clean slate person actually is very valuable, because when you hear your own voice say something out loud, it makes it real. It's no longer just a thought in your mind. And there's something about accountability once it comes out of your mouth and out into the world. It's real.
That is so true. I've seen my friends and I, we call it internet muscles, because people love to flex and show off on the internet, but I dare you to say that to me.
That's true. Yes. Writing is a good thing. It expels the feeling, but when you say it, there's something very real about putting it out there.
Now, you were talking about beforehand about boundaries with children. Should you even think, like, maybe I should compromise with my kids, or you shouldn't do that when they're that young?
You should definitely do that. Now, first let me say, of course it depends on what the issue is. Drugs, alcohol, sex. I mean, there are certain things you do not want to compromise, and as parents, you and your spouse, or you and yourself, if you're a single parent, you need to decide on your values, what is important, and hold tight to those important values. But on other things, like whether they take the bath first or do homework first, there are certain things you can bend and be flexible on. And children learn that even authority figures don't have all the answers, don't know it all, and can, the child learns a great lesson when the authority figure bends to something they're asking for. They learn that they, the child, can be seen, acknowledged, validated, and accepted, flaws and all, by a loving, warmly attuned parent or authority figure. There's a great life gift in that.
You know, when people aren't flexible on issues, or just, like, I guess their own ideas, why aren't they afraid of losing friends or family over it, like when they could have just compromised?
Well, you're talking about ego involvement now, and the average person will look at that person who is either stubborn or rigid and say, he has a huge ego, when in fact, the way I view it is, that person has a fragile ego. That person cannot handle being accountable for any errors. You know, there's a great way of using humor and laughing at oneself. The ability to look at ourselves and laugh it off and say, oops, there I go again. We're all human. We all make mistakes. And learning to make light of it is, in psychological terms, it's called creating a benign superego, and that's Freudian language for What it means is just creating a very non-judgmental way of looking at your own behavior, accepting yourself even when you make a mistake. So becoming less self-judgmental and less self-critical.
I think everybody has in their life at least one person where they know they're like a stone. They will not move. They're impenetrable. You can't convince them to do anything. What do you do when, you know, with that type of person?
Great question. First, in psychology and psychiatry, we think of rigidity as pathology, or at least I do. It is not healthy to be rigid and inflexible. So the first thing to do is give up on trying to change that person and to recognize that it's that person's way of defending and protecting themselves. Who knows if they let go and give in, maybe they would collapse and have a psychological breakdown. One doesn't know what is inside the constitution of someone else's mind, character, personality. The average person is not trained for that. So I say, if you meet someone who's rigid and cannot hear or see or acknowledge your point of view also, take a step back and let it go. Yeah, you know, as long as you can validate yourself, I think that's one of the markers of maturity, where we don't look outside ourselves for validation, but we learn to give it to ourselves. As children, we're looking to our parents and teachers, mentors, but as adults, we need to learn to give that to ourselves, and that's enough.
How important do you think respect is when it comes to, like, people are willing to compromise with you or negotiate? If it's somebody you know and, you know, I respect this person, I know this person, and I want to listen to what they have to say, and I want to understand their point of view. Someone you don't respect, someone who you may not want to even remotely understand their point of view. I mean, does respect even play a factor when wanting to compromise?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me begin by saying one of the bases of therapy is, the fundamental basis is trust. The patient must trust the therapist, but also the patient must respect and believe that the therapist has knowledge above, knowledge and experience above the patient, so that the patient can benefit and reap knowledge from the therapist's experience. So if I, for instance, go to my supervisor, I very much respect him and his opinion. I'm going to work harder to try to understand his point of view and hear it versus someone I don't respect. I'm going to write that person off and not care. So respect is a very, very big factor.
Yeah, that marks the what an adult is, being able to agree and disagree and moving on from it. Or at least that's what the way I was raised to think.
Right, and also, you know, this occurs in couples, in marital therapy. It's a common occurrence that couples disagree. You get two people with their own family histories, their own families of origin, and most often they're very different. They have their own points of view, and often they don't agree on things. How to tolerate and bear loving someone, liking someone, but accepting they don't agree with you. And sometimes you have a strong opinion about something. you know, like how to raise kids or how to discipline the children. It gets complicated.
I actually noticed that with like a couple of my friends. In the beginning, something that was really cute and endearing, like, oh, he loves to sleep on the sofa. Towards the end of the relationship, that can be the deal breaker. Like, oh, he never gets up off of the sofa.
Right. That's right. I think relationships are pretty much the most complicated thing we have to deal with on Earth, in life. Not on Earth, in life.
One of the things I've noticed with people is the reason they run to the internet is because they find so many like-minded people who are going to agree with them. What can you do about that when you want to be part of groups within your real life and people don't want to hear your opinion? I mean, what do you do about that?
I think you have to really take a painful and honest look within and be honest with yourself. If your friends, acquaintances, family, and people in your real life do not agree with you, and you can only find like minds online, there's something not going well in your social life. And I know people like that, or I know them both in my personal life and in my private practice. And there's something missing in their social acuity. So, you know, to each his own. But I think people have to do what makes them happy and content, as long as they're not hurting anyone, breaking laws or rules, and nobody is in danger, then I think, you know, it's okay.
Do you ever think that the reason why people don't want to talk about their opinions is because they don't want to be wrong?
Definitely. I think, well, there are many people who are afraid to express opinion because they're afraid to be criticized. You know, it's very interesting. I, as an adult, I'm a well-trained doctor. I have very clear and strong opinions about how people should be treated, especially children. And yet when I was in elementary school, I was afraid to raise my hand and say anything. And it was not shyness. It was fear of being wrong and fear of public humiliation, being shamed in front of the class. So, of course, you know, and I think everybody has some of that, and depending on how much criticism you got from your parents, we all feel the risk of that.
You're right about, like, public speaking, because when I had to go through speech in college, oh my God, that was, I think I left that for like, that's the last course I'm taking, because I was so afraid to get in front of people. I mean, I think that a lot of people have that. How can you overcome that if that's the reason why you don't want to tell people your opinions?
Well, I think it has to do with self-esteem and learning that you are good enough as you are. That's number one. And recognizing that even the people that you hold high above you err. They make mistakes too. Nobody is perfect. Everyone, we're all on a learning curve. Everyone makes mistakes. And that it's really okay. And learning to shrug your shoulders and silently think, oops, there I go again. Do you hear the smile in my voice? It's gently accepting yourself even when you misstep.
Well, thank you, Dr. Walfish, for coming on. I really appreciate you being here. For the people listening, do you have a website that they can go to?
I do. It's drfranwalfish.com. There are no periods after doctor. It's spelled D-R-F-R-A-N-W-A-L-F-I-S-H. F as in Frank, I-S-H, drfranwaldish.com. You can see all of my writing, television, radio, and clinical practice on the website.
Well, thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate you being here and taking the time out from your day.
My pleasure, Mason. Thanks for having me.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.